To hear the full episode, become a patron at patreon.com/deathpanelpod.
Welcome to the Death Panel. Patrons, thank you so much for supporting the show. We couldn't do any of this without you. If you'd like to help us out a little bit more, share the show with your friends, post about your favorite episodes, pick up copies of Health Communism and A Short History of Trans Misogyny at your local bookstore, or request them at your local library, and follow us at deathpanel_. I'm Beatrice Adler-Bolton, and I'm here today with my co-hosts, Artie Vierkant.
Hello.
And Abby Cardis.
Hello.
And today the three of us are going to be talking about a book called Within Reason, A Liberal Public Health for an Illiberal Time by Sandro Galea, an influential figure in the field of public health and the dean of the School of Public Health at Boston University. It's not a good book. As I'm sure many of you guessed just now, based on the title alone, the book claims to tackle the so-called loss of trust in public health, which Galea attributes to the field overstepping its bounds in response to the COVID pandemic, by which he means it is implied that public health supported broad COVID protections for too long, and that in allowing public health to be politicized, public health institutions, quote, succumbed to the temptation to lean towards illiberalism. Suffice it to say, we have some critiques. So again, the book is called Within Reason, A Liberal Public Health for an Illiberal Time. And if that title sounds familiar to you, it may be because this book was the subject of a New York Times op-ed by Pamela Paul called When Public Health Loses the Public that we talked about on the show back in January. That episode was called Masks and Symbols and is also in the patron feed. But today we can talk about the book itself and Galea's claim that public health has become, as he puts it, quote, an ideologically compromised shadow of its former self.
Yeah. I think it's worth saying from the jump, this book is very much literally a collection of Sandro Galea's blog posts.
Mm-hmm. It's a zine. It is literally a zine.
Yeah. Nothing against zines, but...
Yeah, zines are cool.
But it is a strange book. Chapters are short. They are repetitive. And so we have consistently in this book sort of the same idea brought up over and over and over again, rarely ever becoming more complicated than the first time that it was sort of vaguely brought up. And really, I mean, important to state this, staying vague. In many ways, you know, the ideas remain vague, avoiding taking almost any specific stance other than the things that be broadly mentioned, which is that public health has overstepped itself, that it has become illiberal or leaned into quote unquote illiberal tendencies, which is a term that we'll, I'm sure, talk about in a little bit. And also being really specific that we should sort of uncritically listen to public health experts, while at the same time that those experts should tone down the sort of social justice register, as it were, of their work and stop being so political. It was kind of a chore to read.
Worst book I've ever read.
Literally.
Hands down. No competitors. Like, so above bad. And beyond, yeah. Just left everyone in the dust. Worst book I've ever read.
Fair enough. Because of all that, though, and because the actual contents of this book is so much more loose, repetitive, and vague, and just sort of structureless than I think any of us were even expecting. Mm-hmm. What we're actually going to focus probably the bulk of our conversation on today, or the parts of it that we're going to close read, come literally just from the introduction for the most part, because this, I think, is where the majority of the original writing for the book ended up. And because this is kind of the closest place where you get to getting a coherent singular argument.
Yeah, that's totally true. Like, the thing that I want to emphasize for listeners, I mean, go and read this book if you really want to, like, don't pay for it. I highly recommend that you don't waste your time on it. But in the hopes that no one will actually pick up the book and read it, I just want to emphasize, like, it is not a book in the traditional sense. Like, it is not developing an argument over the course of many chapters. Like, Sandro had one idea and he was just generating content around that one idea for, like, yeah, 2 or 3 years on his blog. And, like, the citational praxis is not so, like, there are two citations for every chapter. And one of them is to Wikipedia and the other is to, like, Vinay Prasad. You know, like, there is so little in the body of the book to really talk about. So I'm doing what I always do, which is just agreeing with you in different words. But yeah,
I will say also, just sort of maybe paradoxically, in addition to there being so little in the book, there are also instances where he goes so wildly out of his depth and yes! cite things like interpretations of Wittgenstein in order to like make his point, right?
He cites Rawls at some point. I'm like, doll, you are not ready for this.
Yeah, it is literally 50 blog posts squished between an introduction and conclusion, bound and regurgitated out by an academic press.
Yeah. But
yeah. Round of applause.
But the reason, you know, we went back and forth for a while on whether or not to actually cover this book because, you know, there's the Pamela Paul piece that B mentioned that was mentioning it. But after that, sort of, it was just crickets. Almost yeah. no one has really talked about this, but Sandro Galea is a influential figure in the field of public health. It's entirely possible that still, you know, even though this does not seem to have any kind of resonant impact, that this could be brought back into view at any time or cited, especially, you know, later down the years. And specifically, I think the reason to focus on it now and look at what he's actually sort of saying here is because I think just like with other sort of normalization discourses we've talked about over the course of the years where, you know, the subtext or the implication is a similar thesis, right? Public health oversteps its bounds, et cetera. We've gone too far. We've made the public do too much in the name of protecting each other, in the name of public health, in response to this pandemic, that we shouldn't do that again. Right. That we won't be doing anything like that again. That's very much sort of the overriding theme of this book. And in that sense, I think it's important just to, you know, just a few months after it's been published, take this moment to sort of go through at least parts of it and point out the many problems here, because at the end of the day, what this book is yet another entry in the sort of genre of here are the things that we should have learned from the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And all the lessons it's trying to take away are wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But everyone's so sick of, you know, like it's so sinister because nobody wants, you know, I feel like nobody at this point wants, except for death panel listeners, a serious analysis of what happened. And instead, like these are the cultural products, like the intellectual products that we're getting to make sense, you know, like in the historical record to like make sense of what happened with COVID.
And I mean, I seriously debated the possible negative consequences of us covering this book, right?
Like shining a light on it by accident and making right. it big. Yeah.
There is a rule in PR, which is that, you know, negative press, right, is also press. And in some sense, my fear was that, you know, this book is already being ignored. Do we really want to sort of dredge it up and give it any more attention? Because it absolutely doesn't deserve it in a sense. But at the same time, it's also, I think it would be really bad to let this go untouched. Yeah. And so I think that's kind of one of the bargain that we're making today, right? Which is like, this is a guy who has a lot of power and has been, you know, a big figure within public health for a long time, but he's not someone who anyone really knows outside of like epidemiology and public health, right, mm-hmm. Abby?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, Sandro, he is a very big deal within the field. I mean, I think he's an intellectual lightweight, as I've said before on the show. He is a very big deal within the field, but I mean, I have no perspective from outside the field, but I can't imagine that anyone knows or cares who this guy is outside yeah. of public.
I mean, I hadn't heard of him before the Pamela Paul piece, and I've, you know, we do this
work. Yeah, you've been doing
so,
the show.
You know, yeah. That I think that speaks to exactly what B is saying. But I think also to B's point, as we get into the specifics of some of the things that he says here, I think it'll be clear how it's not merely that, oh, this is something that must be drawn attention to, but this helps us illustrate Sandro Galea as sort of a type of guy, if mm-hmm. you will, as sort of offering a specific interpretation of the pandemic that, as you'll see, is not going to be particularly surprising probably to anyone who has followed any of our other, whether it's close reads of things or just sort of analysis of, you know, how trends have changed over time in terms of attempts to jockey and influence public opinion and also to influence policy. But there is, I think, a particularly interesting articulation of these things here, especially within this framework that he has chosen, I think, pretty haphazardly, or inattentively, which is through this lens of quote unquote illiberalism. So should we start? Because I think it would be good to just sort of get into this language so that people can hear immediately what we're talking about.
Yeah, let's show and not tell.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so again, just to sort of reiterate myself, this is the, I'm going to start reading from the introduction. I'm going to start reading from the very beginning of the introduction, because once again, this is where we get an actual sort of central thesis. So the book begins, quote, "One of my weekend traditions is to go running each Saturday morning when I'm in my hometown of Brookline, Massachusetts. On the way home, as a reward for the exercise, I typically stop at my favorite bakery to pick up pastries. In winter 2022, when I finished a run, I saw a note on the bakery door. Quote, "While we know the indoor mask mandate has been lifted in Brookline, we will continue to require a mask to shop until further notice." It struck me as remarkable that the bakery proprietors presumably knew the town had consulted public health professionals when making the decision to lift the mask mandate, and that the policy was supported by science. What's more, Brookline is home to many medical professionals owing to the proximity of world-class hospitals in the Boston area, so they should have felt assured that the public health advice given to town leaders was first rate. It's likely the bakery owners did not themselves consult any public health professionals when choosing their own mask policy, because any professionals familiar with the data would probably have advised them to let masking remain optional, as the city had done. The notice thus conveyed a revealing subtext. It effectively said, "The owners of this establishment are aware that public health experts have concluded the science no longer supports the need for mandatory masking in settings like this. However, we are choosing to ignore this guidance because we fundamentally distrust public health experts. We prefer to follow our instincts and ask that you do the same."
This is one of the most infuriating paragraphs that I've ever read in my entire life. Can I just start us off there? Because, I mean, this tracks with something Jules said a while ago, which is, why is it when we're always hearing these sort of hypothetical stories, the person is always having just finished a run.
Or they're doing health behaviors, baby.
Yeah.
That's the secret. That's what we need to be doing, apparently. I it's just never occurred to me to say, I just went on a run. Did you know masks are good?
Go ahead. No, but I mean, this is really kind of indicative of his axe to grind, let's say, right? This is a simple piece of guidance on a bakery door, right? And he takes it as such an affront as to be a unqualified judgment against public health and a deliberate decision to, quote unquote, disregard and not trust in their guidance, right? Like, the amount of cognitive dissonance in order for this to be a relevant complaint, right, requires so much suspension of disbelief, right? You have to like pretend that maybe, you know, the bakery has this deliberate agenda, right? They have read and seen all of the recommendations and they are making this absolutely deliberate decision to defy public health orders, right? And defy the loosening of restrictions, not doing what they've been told to do this whole time, which is to take all the available information and make a cost-benefit decision about what level of risk they personally want to deal with and mitigate, and then allow other people to make choices and respect those choices, right?
That's why I kind of feel like, as we were talking about earlier, it is important and it is worthwhile to talk about this book, because when we're talking about this book, we're not really talking about Sandro as Sandro. Yeah. We're talking about Sandro as kind of an avatar of this entire worldview that I would call, I don't know, like the mainstream of the public health field. And if we think of him as this like avatar of public health as a discipline and like what it's doing, I don't know. It's even more concerning to me and even more shocking to me, because I don't know, it wouldn't be the biggest surprise of my life if just like Sandro had a bunch of terrible opinions, which like he does personally, you know what I mean? Like he personally holds a lot of like really, really terrible opinions. But this episode, this scene of the bakery and the recommendations is so incredibly telling of how the public health establishment thinks, or in actuality, like doesn't really think at all about what it's doing. Because I think it reflects this head up your own ass mindset that, you know, the science is the science, the guidelines are good, the experts are right. And I think it's like a self-serving choice to continue to dwell in that illusion when the facts of what's happening politically in terms of policy completely belie the imagination about how public health is supposed to work and how like public health is supposed to move in the world, because this is in winter 2022. Okay. Like this is Omicron, you know, and it's at this remove. And I know that Sandro is kind of counting on this. You know what I mean? At this remove, it's hard to put ourselves back in that context and in the subjectivity that attended to that context. But it actually was incredibly, you know, a lot of people felt and were saying at the time that the loosening of restrictions was not, in fact, motivated by the realities of the pandemic, was not, in fact, motivated by the findings of science, but was motivated by other considerations.
So he continues, quote, "This speaks to an enormous loss of faith in the public health establishment, a direct result of mistakes made during COVID-19. Brookline, Massachusetts is one of the most politically progressive places in the country. During the pandemic," by the way, you could play a drinking game with how often he says during the pandemic.
Or in post-pandemic, this.
Yeah, I mean, not to do an aside, but I think it's really funny when people say, not funny, it's really interesting when you hear during the pandemic or post-pandemic, because it's so, I just have the sense of, okay, first of all, you could be really more specific and say, after the end of the public health emergency, or you could just not say anything that makes it past tense. You know what I mean? It's so easy to say something else, whatever. Anyway, just saying. During the pandemic, Galea writes, public health directives often met with much more compliance in places like this than in more conservative regions. At least that was the perception. Yet the owners of the Brookline Bakery clearly did not have enough faith in public health officials to follow their advice on masking. Or perhaps they were in fact disposed to believe the advice of public health, but took the course they did out of fear or to signal their allegiance to a political and cultural in-group.
Maybe they have cancer. Like, did you ever consider that, Mr. MD?
I just want to break down his reasoning for a second, since, you know, this book is all about reasoning and logic and, you know, very smart men making very smart arguments. So he says, you know, this whole incident with the bakery, right? He starts off the second paragraph by saying this speaks to an enormous loss of faith in public health establishment. Already, as we've talked about, that is a conflation in him running with this absolutely sort of ridiculous thesis that he was, you know, trying to make a point on, right? And he goes from that to say, so this mere sign on the door, right? The continuation of a mask mandate, which again is everyone's choice in a liberal society, right? We keep being told you choose your pandemic protections, right? That in and of itself represents a loss of faith in the public health establishment. Therefore, because of where it's located in a, as he describes, a politically progressive enclave, it says something, he says, about how the politics of the location of this sign are reflective of just generally how they were always going to respond to health information in the first place, right? He's constructing the red COVID, blue COVID argument that we constantly are pushing back against, whether it's being made by Galea, David Leonhardt, or Biden's administration, right? With the pandemic of the unvaccinated, you have this idea, right, that people's politics are warping their ability to critically reason about the pandemic, and that that warped critical reason is preventing them from following the guidance unquestionably. I mean, the kind of condescension that is on display is rampant, right? But the idea that the problem is that people are not displaying critical reasoning skills because they are making choices for themselves based on their own critical reasoning is just
to
like
to protect themselves and others actively too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it just doesn't hold water. Like this, you know, none of these arguments, as we've been saying, I just want to just lay out though, like really clearly and give an example of how really this is an axe to grind with a cherry picked series of ideas and things that are associated with that axe that are shoved together and dressed up as if it were an argument.
Yeah. Also, I want to make sure to continue to get to the next paragraph because I think the place where it ends is really important. He suggests the bakery may be doing this out of, quote, fear or to signal their allegiance to a political and cultural in-group, mm-hmm. unquote, which he, again, we'll hear further elaboration from him on this in a second, but I just want to note that he might as well have said that the bakery was virtue signaling mm-hmm. or something, to use the way that right-wingers talk about it, right?
Oh, yeah. The rhetoric of this book is very return with a V, but yeah. without necessarily like, committing to that in a real way, even.
Oh, God.
Definitely. Okay, so he continues. Either possibility reflects failure by public health officials. Consider this question. Would such a note on the bakery door even have been conceivable before the pandemic? Can anyone recall an instance before COVID when a business establishment put a note on its door that said effectively, we realize that health experts have decreed X, but we ask you to observe Y? To my mind, I'm going to continue this quote, but just as a very brief aside, has this guy ever heard of like the raw milk phenomenon? But anyway, whatever. Yeah. To my mind,
I was gonna say there's a ton of bars in Florida that say no shoes, no shirt, no problem. Yeah. So.
To my mind, that such a notice may have seemed unremarkable in 2022 reflects an enormous loss of respect for the stature of public health experts and should call for honest self-reflection. Among who, he doesn't say.
Yeah, look elsewhere, because you're not going to find it in this fucking book.
If the public health establishment is not believed because officials are thought to be dishonest or incompetent, this is a self-evident problem, and we should ask ourselves why such a perception might have taken hold. If we are believed, yet our advice is ignored, because the extreme embrace of restrictive public health measures, going beyond even the advice of epidemiologists, has become, above all, a political and cultural signifier akin to the red hats worn by some supporters of former President Donald Trump, we should likewise ask ourselves what role we might have played in bringing this about. Unquote.
Yeah, G. Wonk and Willikers. Why might the public think that you're dishonest and incompetent when you just compared masking to wearing a fucking MAGA hat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To hear the full episode, become a patron at patreon.com/deathpanelpod. You'll get access to this and the rest of our catalog of patron-only episodes, and be the first to get a new patron episode every Monday when it drops. With love, the Death Panel.